Hello and welcome to the NDA podcast. My name is Justin Pierce and I'm the editor. Today's podcast is one in our series NDA Meets, where we sit down and chat to some of the most interesting, influential and insightful people across our industry. And today, it's no different. I'm joined by the amazing Joy Dean. And Joy is head of attention for the UK at Toby Atex. We're going to be finding a bit more about the company, what it does, why and for whom, and then digging a bit more into attention, which has dominated the headlines again this year after doing the same thing last year. So, Joy, good to see you.
Nice to be here.
Before we kick off, let's hear a little bit about you. What's been your background to date before you started at Toby?
Oh, goodness, that's a meaty question. I like to call myself a startup queen. I've worked in startups for the last 18 years, you know, brought Tribal Fusion before it was Exponential to the market, launched Widespace before it was bought by Azerion, launched the programmatic arm of Ogery, and then went to Invibes, launched that from scratch. So when the opportunity came around to start working from, I've always been kind of supply side, working into agencies, trading desks, programmatic. So when the opportunity came around to kind of do something, branch out a little bit different in still a startup capacity, but in a really forward-thinking, forward-moving, kind of trend-setting segment of the industry right now.
So you have worked with some of our most, I guess, our biggest and best companies. So
all down to me.
Oh, of course. All down to you. All down to Joy. I meant to say to everyone, this is a Christmas special because this is the last of our last podcast of the year. So it's very exciting. So Joy and I are sitting here in Christmas fancy dress. You can picture that. But let's move on because I guess you'll be listening to this in January when Christmas is a distant memory. But Joy, so you've worked for some of the best companies around. I guess why Toby Atex? And what exactly is Toby Atex in the first place?
The question of the hour.
Yeah.
So I guess the why could be answered with the who. So Toby, as a company, is a world leader in eye tracking. And they've spent years, it's been around since 2001, spent years and years and years kind of perfecting eye tracking for medical research, deep insights, VR, AR, gaming, DMS, you know, so driving systems now. And they decided in 2017 to launch a attention data exchange, which was leveraging that really robust data sets that they're able to collect, uniquely collect because of the eye tracking background, and then put that out into the digital ecosystem. So when they started to expand, it's a Swedish company, back that up, it's a Swedish company, and when they decided to expand into outside of the Nordics, they were looking for someone, they were looking for a startup queen in the UK to come and kind of bring share of mind to what they're doing. So the head of the segment or the head of the division actually is a person that I used to work with, Emily Loftel. We actually both worked at Widespace. Okay. And so she came to me, let me know about the product, kind of gave me insight into what the driving factors behind launching Atex were and what they were looking for. And it was so interesting because, of course, attention was what everyone was paying attention to at the moment. So I had a great opportunity to step into something that was really interesting, kind of top of mind and topical in terms of what it does in the ecosystem, and also have be kind of a disruptor in the way that things are working in the attention space because we are so different to what is offered currently in the marketplace. So I thought, let's check this out. Let's get under the hood. And here we are. I'm coming up on 9 months. So coming to the end of my first year, you know, and it's been great.
Okay, let's talk a bit about how Toby actually works. Because as you say, sort of tension couldn't be hotter. We're seeing, you know, CMOs and agencies and everyone paying attention to it. And it's delivering results. We're seeing it results now. Maybe 2 years ago it was kind of hype, but now it really is. It's delivering actual results. So let's talk about your different data models. So what role do passive, always on, and local data play in these models? How do you define them?
Okay, so let's take a step before it. So we consider, so Toby Atex itself is an attention data exchange. It's a ground truth centric attention data exchange. And our sell is only the data. The differentiator between us is that we've got the world leading eye tracking hardware and software that we use to collect this fixation and gaze data for a panel. All of that information that we're collecting in a passive manner. it's always on, so it never stops collecting, which means we have huge volumes of data, and it's local, which means if we're measuring in Sweden, we only use that data for Sweden. If we're measuring in the UK, we only use that data for the UK. So that's the first piece. The thing that's interesting about being a ground-centric attention data exchange is that we're not, our main goal as a company is not to productize the data. It's to take it out horizontally through the ecosystem. So that could be to agency, that could be to a DSP, to an SSP, to a publisher, anyone that actually has a system of optimization against whatever key metrics their clients are interested in. So our main goal is to go horizontally across the ecosystem, put this raw data in the hands of our customers and allow them to build their own unique bespoke attention optimization products. And when I say that, I mean, it's not about saying creating something that you only pay for high attention placements or high attention formats. It's about actually understanding what's happening within those placements and formats. So what brands are delivering there, what industries are they in, what channels are they across, and then putting fixation and gaze data against that, and then allowing you to optimize not just on, as I said, the placement and the creative, or sorry, the placement and the ad size, but actually on the brand and the content and the messaging that's happening within that space. And I think we're the only people that are doing that. So that's the first piece. The second is understanding if you're not collecting passively, you're not getting the most unbiased data sets. You're getting, you know, if you're doing an active study, you're telling them what to do, or you're asking them a survey, or you're telling them where to go, and then you're measuring that. So they already, it's not biased. They already have an idea that you're watching, but now they know that you want them to do something. When you do something passively, it means they know that it's on. And because it's always on, over time, they just forget about it. Okay. So they opt in. We're panel-based. They opt in. We send them our hardware, the eye trackers. They calibrate that to their eyes on their desktop. We also work on mobile, which is an app. And then we just leave it on in the background, and that's it. And so we start to collect their normalized consumption patterns. And then on top of that, if it's always on, it means you take in, this is the big one. This is, I think, the most important also, is that you've got this seasonality, you've got changes in consumer behaviors, you've got changes to what's happening in trends in the ecosystem, changes to brand messaging. Because if you're not pulling always on, what you're doing is you're taking a finite moment and then you're using that to extrapolate across every other moment. In your ad placements, every time you deliver an ad, these creatives change. The audience targeting changes. The messaging changes. So it's important to be able to have that full breadth of information to make decisioning. And then local, because if it's not local, it's not relevant to the additional market that you're extrapolating out to. That was a lot.
It's a lot, but it makes so complete sense. In fact, if you're not collecting all the time, you're collecting an artificial environment that's not related to a consumer, you know, consumer's normal life online, normal life generally, I guess. Yeah. But it also strikes me that why isn't everyone else doing this? Isn't it hugely expensive or hugely onerous? Or is it, you know,
that's exactly
it seems
it.
Like the ultimate way to measure attention. But why isn't everyone doing it?
So let's take that's a great question. And I think that's, you've answered it in part of the question, is that it is quite difficult and complex. It's resource heavy to actually be tracking always on and also have the right technology that's able to process always on passive and local data and parse that out into something that can be used and measured and then, you know, optimized against, which is why we're uniquely set to do it because we are the world leader in eye tracking. So we've spent, as I said, we've been around since 2001. We spent the majority of our resource in actually perfecting that technology. When we started in 2001 with our first eye trackers, and we were like, oh yeah, this is great, it's wonderful. And it worked for like blonde, blue-eyed Swedish men, right? Yeah. So from there, it's like we've moved it all the way forward, you know, 22 plus years forward since coming in 2024. And now it's, you know, we can measure all eye shapes, eye colors, ambient light, glasses on, hat on. So it's really, really robust technology, which means what the fact that we're able to collect in this always on manner and this passive manner is because we have technology to do it. And that's the difference between what we offer and what others do, is because we're the only ones coming from an eye tracking background.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So what have we actually been getting from, I guess, agencies and brands in the ecosystem? Because you know, you're doing something different, you're the only one doing it this way. And attention has come so hot, there's quite a lot of competing offerings out there. So, I mean, I guess, what are you seeing in terms of the overall market, in terms of different approaches to attention, and what reaction are you getting?
So we see that there are three approaches to attention. And ultimately, each of these approaches are really separated by what data they train their models on. And for us, it's all about quality, right? So quality data, which no one seems to be talking about right now, which is really odd. Everyone's talking about the prediction models.
Well, you see, so quality data in attention.
The data, yes. So if you're talking about a prediction, the data that you use for your predictions, what's the quality of that data? We're not having those conversations right now. That's the conversation we want to have. Because if you think about it, you're never as good, or your models will never be as good as, or can only be as good as, the data that they're trained on. So it doesn't matter if you come out with a prediction model that everyone's buying into, and then you realize a year or two later that the data that's underlying the prediction model is inaccurate or incomplete or is not actually relevant to the market that it's delivered on. It means that what you've output as a prediction model, it isn't actually going to work, or it doesn't work to the best that it can, or it's working on false data sets. So we see three ways of doing this. We've got the ground-centric approach, which is what we're doing, which is has to be passive, it has to be always on, it has to be local, and it has to have a visual attention element, so an eye tracking element. It can't be called ground truth without that eye tracking piece. And I feel like a lot of people on market today are kind of buying into that. A lot of brands and agencies are saying we want eye tracking involved.
So are you saying that attention in advertising can't really be delivered without eye tracking?
100%. Okay. I don't believe that it would be, maybe I'm controversial here, but I don't think it's attention if no one's looking at it. Yeah. I mean, how can that be attention if there's not a set of eyeballs actually looking at it? That's the first step. So, you know, I try to say visual attention, right? Because then maybe others are defining attention in another way or using different metrics. So when we speak about attention, Toby, we're talking about visual attention. The issue goes back to, obviously, with ground-centric approach is the resource-driven piece. You have to have a panel, which means it takes time. It takes a little bit longer. You have to actually grow those panels out in order to do that. And you need to have the technology. The next approach, which is a bit more scalable, and it's where I think most of the other vendors, the attention vendors, live in, bar one, which would be Adelaide, I would say it has an eye-tracking element. It's not always on, and it's a combination of passive and active. So they might do a passive study in one finite for a month, let's say, and then top it up with active studies, which, as we know, are not the most unbiased. And then they'll use that information, or use those data sets to extrapolate out. That data may be, you know, leveled up. It may be like recalibrated over time. It may be once a year, once a quarter. Who knows? Depends on whatever their models are. But their data sets that they're beginning the training with is small. Okay? What it does is it gives you a really scalable product. It's cheap. It's easy and quick to go to market. It's easy to buy. And then you have a model that's gone out. The limitations is that it is limited data sets. And your prediction is only as good as the data that it's trained on. So if you're training on inaccurate, non-local, non-passive, and limited data sets, it means your prediction model is going to be exactly the same. And then the third would be what we like to call the kind of enhanced in-screen. We don't consider it to be attention. This is what something like an Adelaide would do, where it's about taking on-screen or in-screen elements, so swipe or scroll viewability, and using that to then predict out your attention models. I mean, it is the cheapest. It's the most scalable. It's been bought into quite a lot because when you think about it, the decision makers that are coming to buy attention aren't necessarily data scientists. They're looking to have an easy to buy, a packaged up product that they can put on plan, tick a box and go. And also, if you don't have that kind of data science background and understanding of what it is that you're buying, it does look and feel like you're doing what the market is leading you to do. You've got a product that is predicting attention. But getting under the tin, getting under the hood, like really understanding what it is that you're buying is the part that I think is missing. And the part that we're trying to help start a conversation around. Because there is a place for everything. There's a place for all three of these models, but it's understanding what are you buying and then using what's appropriate for what your outcomes are.
I think it's interesting you say, you know, most CMOs aren't data scientists. Most heads of agencies aren't data scientists. And so the knowledge will be there somewhere in the organization, I guess. But you're right, people don't understand this to such a granular level, but people understand results, people understand ROI. So I guess my question to you is that if this is kind of the holy grail of attention, it's the most accurate, the most, you know, just the most accurate, the most robust, what sort of results are you seeing? What sort of results do you think can change the minds of these people who, say, probably are happy with a lesser product?
Well, the thing is, you don't know. It's like you don't know what you don't have until you know what you don't have. And for us, we've been in the UK actively, like in the UK, having conversations for the last 7 months. So we're on proof of concept stage. Mm. For us, it's like, obviously, it's outcomes and sales. You judge sales by sales. And we always say we do want to big ourselves up.
Of course you do, Joy.
But the proof is in the pudding. So I would invite anyone that's listening to this, call me up. I'll give you the data, put it in your hands, and then you run it like for like, and then you see for yourself. So it's less about having this hard sell to convince you that it's better or that it provides something. Let's even take the word better off of it, but it provides a different opportunity. It provides different data sets. It gives you different ways to enrich what you're already doing. It gives you ways to kind of, attention extension, like expand upon what you're already doing within your own current models. And also you can work these things together. If you're working with one vendor, you should be trying them all, combine what they're doing, like really get the best out of each of us in the space. And then you see what works the best for you at the end and judge by that.
Okay, let's take a bit of a wider question, which is how is attention the best way to measure the effectiveness of advertising? It we've both talked about this. It's been around for a couple of years now or longer, but definitely the last 2 years seen attention in the headlines all the time. It's hotter and hotter and hotter. And most people are aware now of the value of attention, I guess, across the industry. But is attention, is it the best way to measure the effectiveness of advertising? And if so, why?
Not on its own.
Okay.
In my short answer. Attention is where we start. I mean, it's a very important metric because it's what you see. It's that first visual piece where you are cognizant of something, and then you can make an impact. But it shouldn't be done by itself. It shouldn't be used as a standalone metric. It should be used in combination with all of the other benchmarks, with all of the other data sets, with all of the other targeting and optimization tools that you use within an agency or within the brand, because you understand your clients, you understand your products, you understand your benchmarks, etc. Those things should be combined to create a custom algorithm or to create very specific and bespoke targeting for what you're doing. If you take just attention on its own, it's the same as when we're like, oh, viewability, let's make it 2 minutes. Or like, you know what I mean? You gamify it, you make it overpriced. It's not about picking one thing out and making that the silver bullet. It's about, you know, filling up your tool shed, can't find the right analogy for that.
Sheds,
I feel like I might be doing some DIY or something this holiday. Yes. But filling your well with all the information and all the tools, and then using that to comprise something that actually is relevant to your outcomes that you're searching for.
And what about, I mean, other macro factors driving the focus on attention, I guess? The cookie you can't get away from. In fact, we had an event last week, and the cookie was mentioned just once. I was very proud.
But the cookie, look at that.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. The death of cookies does dominate. We know that it's coming next year, maybe, hopefully, one day. So how much is the death of the cookie, that sort of argument, driving the focus on attention, do you think?
I think, time-wise, obviously, whenever something like this is happening, it opens up opportunities for new kind of trends, new tech to kind of push forward in replacement, because everyone's looking for, what do they do? What am I doing? Right. However, I don't think that it is the only reason why attention is so relevant today. One is that it's really relevant to what we're doing as digital advertising in the digital advertising ecosystem. But also it's that the technology has caught up with us. Like before, we weren't able to measure attention the way that we can measure attention now. So it's like, as we evolve within the ecosystem, as our technology evolves, it means that we then are able to harness it in different ways. And that's what we're doing. You know, even us, we've been working in the space, you know, since 2001. But to really harness what we're doing and then make it applicable to this kind of, you know, digital ecosystem like we're doing now, that takes time. It takes tech. It takes R&D. It takes research. And I think we've come to this crossroads, if you will, where it just happened to be in line with the desire to replace an, you know, a validation system or a measurement system or a targeting system because the cookie is gone. And, oh, we can do it now because the technology of measurement has caught up where we can visually define attention. And not just you looked at an ad and the ad was in view, but really you're not even looking at it. It's on the bottom of the screen or on the side of the screen. But to have the ability to look at the screen and see contextually where your eyes are going, how long you're fixated on a particular brand, compare two brands against each other because they're both running on the same page. Who is your audience actually looking at? And really pulling that together, that's new tech, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, to do it at the level that we're doing it now, let's say, is new tech. So I definitely think there's a relevance piece, a timing piece, and then also the fact that we're looking for a disruption to replace this cookie.
You mentioned this new tech, and you mentioned this viewability just now, and you talked about how effectively it's measuring advertising in combination with other offerings. So do you think that attention should become a new currency? And I guess the wider question is there, will we see sort of standardization frameworks in place across the industry? You're laughing when I say standardization.
I laugh because I sit in the, we're on the council with the Cognitive Council for ARF, and we're part of IAB US's Attention Task Force. And it's, I always laugh at that question because when you sit and you listen in the room with everyone speaking, everyone in an attention space has a completely different view and obviously their own kind of business mindset of what's good for the way that they work, in how we should be using attention and how we should be measuring attention. I don't really think that in any near future we're going to see a agreement and standardization about what exactly attention is. Is it biometric? Is it like, oh, you're sweating, so you're paying attention, or you know what I mean? Like, there's all these different pieces, so. Will it be standardized in the near future? No, I don't think so. Is there going to be some kind of baseline that comes out that's, you know, we need to start here and we all agree that we start here? Yes, I can see that happening. I don't think it'll become a currency, or I don't think that it should become the currency. I think that it should be a piece, as we said, in combination alongside other multiple ways of buying and using the right metrics and the right currency for what it is that you're doing. But where I sit now, I don't think so. Ask me again at the end of 2024.
Yeah, I will. I mean, is that going to be an issue? Because I guess back to that, you know, your description of, you know, marketers aren't data scientists largely, and complexity is often off-putting. And if brands are being asked to put investment into this new area, attention, and if it's being run by many different conflicting vendors and no one's aligined, and isn't that going to sort of drive away interest in the
I think
technology?
It will. I mean, yeah, the more complex it is, the more difficult it is to get people on board. And if a brand is like, well, my what I'm doing is working, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing, why should I try this new, you know, attention, blah, blah, blah. So I get that. I think it's going to be where I think the industry should be going is looking at how do we all get on board and collaborate in the understanding and education of attention to the ecosystem, which is about, instead of it being a hard sell about buy me, it's about actually breaking down what it does, how it works, the different ways that it works, which is what the IAB is actually doing now. So we're doing this. At first, ARF did one. They did a massive RFI, and I think it's tons and tons of pages that's going to be released soon, where they went to all the different vendors, both creative, ad tech, and they asked them, you know, I don't know, 50 questions about attention and how they worked. And they're putting it out into the industry. Okay. So people can read up on how the different ways that people work. Now they're doing one for creatives. So I think the more important part for us right now is to be a part of that conversation so we can continue to get buy-in and give our point of view, give people the opportunity to test with us. And then as we go, figure out how, as a community of attention vendors, we can do the best for both our customers, for the users out there that are that we're collecting this information from, and then also obviously for on the supply side for inventory. Because if you look at the inventory side, you never want to inflate the price of an ad placement because you're now like, oh, this is, we've predicted that this ad placement on this side is going to be the best, not taking into consideration the campaign and the creative that changes. That means the inventory side is hard pressed, right? Because now it drives everyone to buy in this one space. So we end up 2 years, 3 years down the line, we've got overinflated price on ad placements. You've got brands that are being underserved or not really moved by the outcomes because it's incomplete and it's not actually delivering across or optimizing across the differencing and messaging and creative and campaign targeting. So it's a tricky one. And I love to go off topic, but it's a tricky one because I feel a little bit like we shouldn't be at odds about what's going on in the industry and we should be speaking more about how do we put out value, how do we put out quality, how do we educate the actual advertisers about what it is that we're doing so they know what's why they should be using attention and how to use attention, you know?
I get attention from me sort of ties together lots of sort of other bigger industry factors such as the need for fewer and better ads, the need for sort of less kind of rubbish made for advertising inventory, the need for more sustainable advertising. Attention kind of ties this together because really, if you're delivering better attention, it's better advertising.
Yes.
But you mentioned just then about, I think, letting consumers know what was happening. So where does attention, role does attention play in another massive factor, which is move to a privacy first world? Which you know is happening. We know the consumers are to a large or lesser extent vaguely aware of the value exchange or not on advertising. The tech giants definitely are. So we're moving to a world which is privacy first. So what role does attention play here, especially in consumers' minds?
Well, I think it's two folds. So you've got one side is the I mean, we're, and also because what we do is panel based, so we're collecting data, opt-in data from people that are have agreed to use our technology and are allowing us to track, measure what they do on a daily basis. And in terms of user, it's when I say about not, let's say not being intrusive, like not holding up pages, because we actually do see the metadata on the back when we're looking at the website. So not holding up the pages, not causing latency, that sort of thing. I think the users are getting more, or consumers on the other end are becoming more and more aware that they're being tracked, that their data is being used. And I think with attention, we have the opportunity to deliver quality, relevant advertising to them rather than spamming them with whatever. So if they're paying attention to it, continue to, it's like, what is that saying? If you, it's goodness, and I've just lost it. I'll give you another one. If you have an apple and an orange and some cream, let's make a sundae, right? Okay. So, and if you like a sundae, does that mean you like an apple and orange and the cream separately? Yeah. So it's like figuring out how do you create relevance? How do you create opportunities to engage? How do you make sure that when you're working with attention vendors, the outcome of the campaigns that are targeting the audience is actually something that they want to pay attention to? Reduce the clutter, reduce the spamming of inconsequential ads, right? Like doing that. On the flip side, as an attention vendor for us, and I can't speak to others, we put a lot of energy into making sure that we're compliant in terms of privacy. We have a lot of information that's actually going to be released in the coming year about how exactly we do that. I think that's even a follow-up piece that I can share that kind of thing out, where we work internally and we also have like a privacy team that is working on how do we continue to collect the data. Because as I said, when we collect data, they've got the hardware on the page, but we're scraping the metadata off the back. We have a VPN that's doing accessibility on the mobile, so we take print screens. So that we're doing a lot, and even though it's opted in, there's still pieces that we need to cover our butts on. I was going to curse it. Cover our butts on, right? So I think once we've kind of formulated our external kind of press around this, this is something that we can share about exactly how we do that.
Okay, fantastic. So let's talk about, we've talked a lot about the advantages of focusing on attention for the consumers as well as advertisers, I guess publishers too. But what you've been 9 months in, and you're trying to build this new company, which is trying to help build this new sector. What are the biggest challenges, you think, overall? You touched on many different ones through this conversation. What are the biggest challenges for establishing attention as kind of a must-have for brands and agencies?
I think, yeah, couple. One is, I think, the biggest challenges, I think, is more, for us, the first part is we're kind of a disruptor coming in, so it's about share of mind. We're like the biggest eye-tracking company that no one's ever heard of, right? So it's about understanding, you know, getting others to understand who we are and what we do. Understanding that data quality is important, that's a really big challenge because we find that whenever we have these conversations, no one is asking about that. So that's a big challenge and a hurdle that we all need to get over. And I think maybe it's a conversation that's not had because most people are not don't have the level of quality and robust data sets that we have. So that's the piece. I think also a worry that we have is that we have advertisers, as I said, with the don't it's not broken, don't fix it attitude that are feeling like they've tested attention with a party or with a vendor, and they haven't really seen much uplift. It's been nominal. The outcome doesn't really do a whole lot. And that goes back to what's under the tent of the prediction models. Is it the most robust? Is it always on? Is it using eye tracking? And my worry would be that we get to this point where now everyone's bought into attention or that it's interesting as a topic, but the outcomes don't represent the full benefits that they can because the data that we're training our models on isn't complete and accurate and robust. So, yeah, so that's my three, I suppose. You've got the buy-in, don't broke, it's not broke, don't fix it. Two, understanding the quality of the data that you use your, that you build your models on, that you train your models on, that can actually bring better, bring more sales, bring better outcome, whatever that outcome is. And then making sure that we actually are bringing a value set that is educational to market and finding a way to be collaboratory across the ecosystem for attention vendors.
I think it's really struck with me talking about the quality of the data that that feeds the models. I know when I talk to people, you know, people in the AI segment of marketing, and there's is worries there that what's the data that's training these models and how old is it? Where does it come from? So I think, yeah, in attention, you're right. I don't think there's enough focus on the quality of the data that's feeding the models. But lastly, how can this be changed, you think? You sit on the IAB boards and various boards. How can this be changed? Is it just pure education from companies like you so that CMOs and agencies now are asking more questions of the actual quality of the data or what?
I think it is. I think it's about, as I said, when I talk about this collaborative piece, it's about making everyone accountable for talking about this piece. Like if you think about AI, you know, I was trained in graphic design. That's what I went to school for. And we did like website building. And the thing that they always say, it's called GIBO, garbage in, garbage out. Okay, it's exactly the same thing. Anything that you're doing, whether you're training AI, if it's big machine learning, whatever it is that you're using, the quality of the data is the very beginning of any and everything. It's like the seed. And if you want to grow a tree that actually bears fruit, your seeds need to be healthy. That was a great
good.
Analogy.
Patting
myself on the back for that one.
That was very good.
That conversation needs to be had. And then it's about empowering our customers horizontally across the ecosystem to ask educated questions, right? It's not about making business inaccessible to anyone or any player or any company. It's about making sure that the business models that are being put out are actually what they say they are, do what they actually say they do, provide actual uplift, provide actual value and outcome, and then giving the tools to the buyers to be able to understand and ask the questions to make sure they get to that end goal. And that's the conversation we should be having, really. That's the conversation I'm going to be having all next year, banging my quality of data drum. People can get tired of me, the data girl. But yeah, you know, so if we can all agree to do that and have those conversations about the importance of that seed to get to the tree that bears the fruit, then I think we'll all be on the same page in the end.
Amazing. Now I'm going to ask a last question, but I think you kind of answered it, but let me ask it. Because it's Christmas. It's Christmas here now. It's not Christmas where you're sitting, where you're listening. I imagine it's probably quite a dull, depressing January. But here we're in a studio full of Christmas cheer. And at Christmas, you get given presents. So what would you like from Father Christmas, who's giving you a present purely in the frame of this market and attention and the industry that you're working in? What do you want as your one present from Santa this year?
Oh, sweet Jesus. That's a tricky one. Let's see. I would like Santa. Oh, say Santa. Father Christmas, you say.
Father
here.
Christmas.
We showing do. My Americanness. I want Father Christmas to send all the decision makers from all of the agencies to me to have me come in and educate them on quality data of attention.
That's a lovely Christmas wish. And a great afternoon, which went. So, Geraldine, thank you so much. That's been amazing. And I totally buy into your argument about quality of data. I think that'll dominate next year. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening.